Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an entrepreneur that has done it so many times that it's easy to lose track. But again, we're going to be talking about everything that you like to hear, like building, scaling, financing, exiting, you know, whether it's early, you know, through transactions, I mean, whatever that is. But again, you know, quite the inspiring journey. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest today. You know, let's welcome Bradley Bostich. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Alejandro. Excited to be on the Dealmaker Show.
So originally born in South Dakota, but you moved quite a bit, you know, growing up because of your dad's job. How was life growing up for you?
It was great. I had a very classic Midwest upbringing, kind of middle class family. My dad was in the banking industry. And when he would get promoted, we'd move to some other new town. And it's kind of funny as I reflect, my original stomping grounds of Brookings, South Dakota, it was somewhere in the 15,000 to 20,000 people in the whole town. So much different than Madrid, where you're from. And then when we moved to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, I remember thinking, and I was in kindergarten, so I was a little kid, I thought, this is a huge city, right? It was like 125,000 people there. And then ultimately moved to Omaha, Nebraska, which was even bigger. But we did move around the Midwest quite a bit with my dad's job in banking.
So how did you get into the whole world of business and perhaps computer? Because that's what you ended up studying in Indiana. So how was that combination? How did that come about?
Yeah, there was definitely a big influence by my father, because in banking, he was exposing me to a lot of interesting businesses that he would work with. And some of those did well, some of them didn't do well. And his job was to underwrite risk and provide loans primarily. So you heard a lot about businesses that didn't work, because when they didn't do well, they couldn't pay their loans. But then I also got a chance to meet some really interesting people that were very successful, that were entrepreneurs. And I just remember really marveling at what they were able to create and just feeling like, while my dad had taken this more conservative path, I really wanted to go out there and create something from nothing. That was always something I was interested in. So I was always pitching him on business ideas. And he would tell me all the ways that they would fail. And then, you know, every once in a while, I'd have a good one that he would say, hey, that's a good idea. And that was what led me to deciding to pursue business and computer information systems, because I was in college at about the time the web was being spun and Netscape came out and was on all the computers. And I had already been working on the internet through more of the telnetting and classic methods like that. So as a self-taught tech person who was exposed to business, it was just obvious for me that that was the path I wanted to go down.
I'm sure that your parents were not really thrilled with the idea of pitching them something that they could have required dropping out of college. So there was a decision to make over there. Was that the case?
That's true. Yeah. When I was in college, I wrote a business plan for an e-commerce company. This was back in about 1995, and it was geared towards selling college textbooks over the internet. And so the idea was you put all your class schedule in, and then the system would automatically identify the books you needed and deliver those to you, which was a very novel idea at the time. Now that seems like a pretty basic concept, but nobody was doing that yet. And I did faced this crossroads where I started the business. It was making some money. And I remember thinking, geez, should I drop out and just do this? And then I ultimately made the choice to stay in school. And I'm glad I did. But you just never know how things are going to play out. Obviously, there are some pretty phenomenal success stories about people who dropped out of school to pursue their business. But just the way that my parents always kind of taught me coming up, that I would finish college and graduate, which is what I chose to do.
College graduate and then also corporate America, right? So you went to Ernst & Young.
Correct.
You were doing some consulting, but I think that probably gave you some perspective, no, when it came to maybe addressing problems.
It did. And that was another example. My dad encouraged me to get a quote unquote real job when I graduated from school rather than starting another tech startup. And so I went to work for Ernst & Young and had a chance to meet some really smart people, went through their consultant training program and got involved with some interesting projects. And some of those were in the healthcare world. And I was just amazed at the fact that if you're building an e-commerce company, everything you do was geared toward making the customer experience great. But in the healthcare industry, it was the opposite. Everything was geared toward how the caregivers could document and bill for whatever they were doing, really without regard to the patient having a great experience. And I just felt like I could help make that better, which is a big reason that I got into healthcare.
And obviously, a big one there, you know, was a, you know, unfortunate event that happened with your mom. So how do you think that they really fueled your, I would say, interest in really solving problems around healthcare?
Yeah, well, you know, back in my early to mid 20s, I really felt like I could do anything. And, you know, that sort of continues to be my mindset to this day, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm always in the affirmative, more, you know, have an abundance mindset. And so I was already down this path of, hey, I can make healthcare better. And then my mother got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And so all of a sudden it made it personal. You know, it wasn't just about trying to make money or trying to do something that could create a career path. It was, wow, this is my mom. You know, she was my best friend. And all of a sudden she is thrust into this really scary diagnosis with stage 4 cancer. And I saw the actual reality of a patient traversing a complex healthcare issue like that in this fragmented, siloed healthcare environment. And that was when I knew that I just wouldn't rest until I made an impact on healthcare for millions of people. And I've been down this path now since then. She passed away December 23rd of 2000. And ever since, I've been waking up every day trying to find ways to make healthcare better for other people.
Now, your first company, that was ChaCha. I mean, one of the first ones. Obviously, the first one was in college. But one of them was ChaCha, and that was definitely an experience where you got quite a bunch of lessons. You know, in fact, one of them being able to understand what is the time to turn page. So tell us what happened with that experience.
It's so true. And I'm very happy to share the wisdom that I've gained with other entrepreneurs where things haven't worked out the way that you necessarily had hoped. And ChaCha was one of those examples. It was a great idea. In fact, it resembled very much what ChatGPT is, believe it or not. The idea was, what if you could ask any question on your mobile phone and get the answer and have the answer be formed like a really smart human was answering that question? And this was back in 2005. And so this was not a healthcare specific business. This was a business partner that I knew that was very smart. And he and I were having lunch one day and kind of sketched this out on a napkin and said, hey, let's go after it. And so it was a bit of a detour outside of healthcare. I still had other things, other interests in healthcare while I was building ChaCha, but this was my day job for a few years. And the thing that went right with it was compelling and consumers loved it. So they could text ChaCha. This was back before apps became, you know, a thing on your phone. So you would text the word ChaCha, which was 242-242 at the time. And you could ask it any question. And by the way, if you try that number now, I have no idea where it goes. It's probably not something you should send it to. But back then, it was our number. And you would get an answer back. And it was really cool. And it was the combination of artificial intelligence and human intelligence. So if we had a high probability match in the system, it would answer you automatically. Like, how many eyelids does a camel have? I remember that was one of the questions. And it would answer, you know, 3 eyelids. And this is why. And then if there was not an answer, it would route to a human that was in a community, kind of like Twitter is now, you know, and Twitter actually was just starting up at that time. In fact, we were one of the first, if not the first, integrations into Twitter, where you could ask your question through Twitter, get the answer back. It's a really cool business. So it took off like crazy. Our marketing strategy worked brilliantly. We aligned with certain events because it was very fascinating. If you ask somebody, hey, we've got, or you said to somebody, we have this service on your phone that you could ask it any question and it'll answer you. People would just be blown away by that idea. And then you'd say, okay, cool. What do you want to ask it? And they would have no idea what to ask it. So we had to find a way to associate it with some kind of event. So we launched it at the Sundance Film Festival, and it was positioned in a partnership with Sundance as mobile answers for fans. And so if you showed up at Sundance, you'd see this ChaCha, you know, promotion, and you could ask it about, like, U2 was performing there, or there was a new movie or whatever. And so it was pretty cool. And I had a chance to meet a lot of interesting people. In fact, I met Quentin Tarantino for one. And the first thing he said was, ask Cha-Cha who I am, which is what you do if you're in the entertainment business, because I saw that as a pattern. And we asked it and it gave a really interesting answer and he loved it. So that made for some pretty cool selfies, you know. But ultimately what happened that didn't go well, we scaled it to like 28 million monthly unique users, but there was a fundamental issue in the business model from a cost perspective. There was a microtransaction getting shared with every single answer that got provided by this community. And that drove a huge amount of cost when you started doing hundreds of millions of those answers. And on the other side, from a monetization perspective, there wasn't really mobile monetization yet. And so we were actually putting our content on the internet and monetizing with Google ads through our website. Well, Google ended up changing their algorithm and it blew the revenue model apart online as well. So it was just a series of things that just didn't quite map to the thing that ultimately we wanted to achieve. And I think a great metaphor is, it's like when you're trying to fly into outer space, you have to have the exact right exit angle, right? Or you will dissipate in the stratosphere on your way out. And in this case, we just didn't have the exact right exit angle. And I ended up exiting the business early before they ultimately ended the business. And it worked out fine. I learned a ton. It worked out okay economically because I was out, you know, before they got to a really dire situation from a capital perspective. But I learned a ton and had a lot of fun and really look back at that as one of the most valuable learnings I've had in my career, even though, you know, definitely could have been a multi-billion dollar exit if we had executed a little bit differently, I think. But, you know, it worked out and in a different way, and I moved on.
Hey, guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So fast forward now to what you're up to, right? With Health Cloud Capital. I mean, obviously, there's a bunch of stuff that you're doing there. And we'll talk about it, like, for example, HC1. But how do you land into the whole concept of Health Cloud Capital, and what were the sequence of events that needed to happen for you to bring it to life?
Yeah, what I really determined, one, in going through the Cha-Cha experience, has helped with this, is I was so passionate about healthcare. It was just, everything was different when I woke up every morning thinking about how I was going to impact people's lives in healthcare. So I wanted to do that solely. And ultimately, I actually started HC1 before I started Health Cloud Capital. But what I did was, ultimately, as we were growing HC1, we had some opportunities for some secondary proceeds from an exit perspective while still maintaining control of the business. And then got to the point in 2017 through a series of events we'd had historically, exit events and secondaries, that we decided, hey, my business partner, Travis Morgan, and I decided to start a fund called Health Cloud Capital. And the initial investment for the fund was actually into HC1. So it was a little bit of an interesting model where we became our own venture money, basically, because we wanted to inject more capital in the business, but we wanted to do it in a structured way where we could continue to control the business. And then also we had developed this pattern for how you could go deep into a given healthcare data set, refine that data and enrich it, and then identify risk signals in that data in order to ultimately create better outcomes for patients and boost the bottom line of healthcare and really get into what people refer to as value-based care, where instead of having healthcare payments happen every time there's a transaction, a test, or an appointment, which is kind of backward because then you get paid more in healthcare if you're a caregiver or a clinic or a hospital if you have sicker patients. You know, that's kind of a perverse incentive. And so with our businesses, we saw that this value-based model was starting to emerge where you could get paid more as a doctor or a hospital if you provided care that resulted in better outcomes. And so there were a few of these opportunities that I saw where we could apply the same recipe that we apply in lab data with HC1 to other areas, which has now resulted in two other portfolio companies. One is real-world evidence for medical device. Another is looking at prescription data at scale using AI and technology to improve people's prescriptions, which ultimately makes them healthier. So that's how Health Cloud Capital really came to be. And, you know, frankly, that I didn't have a crystal ball, but I just, my gut told me if we had a fund, we could take our own ideas and we could scale them better and we could bring the right people to run them. And that's what's ultimately happened. So we control all three of those companies and they're all part of that Health Cloud Capital family.
So is it technically an incubator that you guys have or like a startup studio or how would you?
You know, it's really not that fancy. It's capital and it's you know, people that know about healthcare and we have this broad network. I actually have a podcast called Boombastic Health as well that I started to have conversations with innovators that are bold in the healthcare space. And those are the kinds of people that ultimately become CEOs of companies that we start. So I would say that we have a pattern, we have a recipe that we bring to the table for each of these companies to de-risk them. And we also have a lot of relationships because every one of these businesses relies upon provider-oriented data sets to generate value. And because we're trusted and respected across the healthcare industry within health systems and within payers and within pharma, we have a very short list of people we can call up that will engage with us and unlock a lot of value. So for example, we have a relationship with Mayo Clinic, great partner to work with, very, you know, a gold standard kind of brand in healthcare. When we decided to address this issue of real world evidence for medical devices and formed what became 3Aware, we ended up getting engaged with some of our friends at Mayo Clinic and saying, hey, we can solve this at scale. And they said, wow, that would be great. We have medical device companies that come to us all the time and say, how can we mine the data to see where we're having adverse events or where we could better apply our devices or create new devices? And we said, yeah, well, this is a great partnership. And so ultimately, that resulted in Mayo partnering to provide this data access for 3Aware. So we could apply our AI and natural language understanding to unearth information about devices. But then ultimately, they liked it so much, they co-invested with Health Cloud Capital. So it's a pretty cool, you know, as you're aware, in any industry, even though healthcare is huge, there aren't that many people who are really the bold innovators. It's a kind of small club over time that you get to know. So that's really what we bring. It's the relationships and the know-how.
So let's dive deep into one of those assets that you guys have in Health Cloud Capital, which is the one that you lead, and that is HC1. For the people that are listening, what is HC1? What is the business model there? How do you guys make money?
Yeah, so HC1 makes money by transforming a health system's laboratory, the clinical lab, into a strategic asset that better diagnoses patients more effectively and also boosts the bottom line of the healthcare system by increasing the right kind of volume into the laboratory from other doctors across the community that can use that lab to do their lab testing as well. So just like any other business, the lab is a business that has to manage its costs and work on its growth. It just so happens that 80% of all diagnostic decisions are informed by laboratory results. So typically the lab gets perceived to be a cost center within a health system, and it doesn't really get leveraged in a very strategic way. But come to find that if you use AI and you sit on that data across the entire healthcare continuum, you start to see these constellations of signals from lab information that's longitudinal, meaning it's back from the beginning of when you started going to healthcare checkups all the way to today. You can do things that are really, really powerful to prevent illness. You can help patients avoid having chronic kidney disease. You can optimize the way that you prepare a patient for a surgery and ensure that they aren't anemic when they come in for surgery, which can lead to bad outcomes. So it's like the lab is the central nervous system that controls healthcare delivery, but it hasn't been utilized in that way. And we make it so it's lit up across the entire healthcare continuum to drive the optimal value. And the final thing I'll mention that people take this for granted, it seems like when you get lab testing done, of course the doctors know exactly what lab tests to run. It's not always the case. Typically, there are standing test kinds of panels, they call them, that will get run on patients. Oftentimes, there might be better, newer tests that could be run. There might be more proactive ways that you could be monitoring different values within your body from testing that just get missed because doctors are busy and they've spent, you know, time in medical school studying lab 20 years ago. There's no way for a human being to know everything all the time and to put the time it takes to ensure all the testing is optimized. So we're using AI and technology to make it so every single caregiver, every single healthcare system can be doing the optimal testing of all their patients, which ultimately helps you stay healthier and stay out of the healthcare system. And that's why I'm so excited about HC1. Our scale is big. We're covering over 100 million unique individual Americans at this point with our systems. And that's through healthcare system relationships and clinics and labs all across the United States.
And also, how much capital have you guys raised to date?
Around 80 million.
And what has been the experience of raising that money? I mean, obviously now you guys have, you know, good understanding of how the capital, you know, structures work. So, you know, why did you go out, you know, to raise money from external people and what was that process like?
Sure. We have been fortunate through Health Cloud Capital to be able to maintain control of the business through a small, you know, kind of group of us as partners. But over time, you start recognizing that you need other investors that have additional connections, additional ideas, additional talent that they can bring into the, this has been my experience at least. And so we've been very selective about who we've brought into the business. And then on top of that, we recently made an acquisition. And that acquisition was in large part to bring in some additional talent. And through that acquisition, we brought in a new capital partner called Arsenal Capital Partners, who was the owner of the asset that we acquired. And they brought that asset into our company through this transaction and are now an equity partner with us. And they are a top tier fund that we really appreciate as a partner. And so it's been a bit of an evolution, I would say, but we've been treating HC1 as the long term kind of business build that it is. It's not an overnight thing to go connect up to thousands of healthcare systems and labs and generate this kind of value across all this data. Frankly, we've trained our AI algorithms on like over 90 billion lab results now. And so the system can automatically organize and enrich data in a way that you couldn't do if you hadn't done all that training of the models. And that took, you know, a decade, right? So we've managed to stay in position of having control of the business. And then this recent acquisition was significant for increasing the scope of our capabilities to help health systems and labs optimize the impact that they have across the continuum of care. And then you'll see some big announcements from us, I would predict, in the next year as we continue to step on the gas and consider additional ways to expand both organically and through acquisition.
Amazing. Now, obviously, you know, I say you're expanding, acquisitions, raising money. You know, there's always a vision, right, that people are betting on. And talking about the vision, if you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision of HC1 is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Well, remember the story about my mom being sick, and she got to this point where there wasn't a conventional therapy that was best for her. And so the next step was, what are the experimental options? What are the research-oriented options that are out there? And there really wasn't a good answer for that. So imagine a world in which every single diagnostic test is leading to the optimal treatment. And every time a patient's identified where they're eligible for some novel new treatment, and they should be in more of an experimental program, that match is made automatically. That there isn't this kind of hope factor of, gosh, I hope my mom gets the best possible care. I hope she gets the best chance at living a longer life. If you could know definitively that the diagnosis was made as early as possible, as accurately as possible, and that the treatment was being performed in an optimal way, and ultimately connect that all the way through to the pharma industry and what they can do to help advance new medication therapies and treatments, wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't that be great if we all knew and had confidence that every single patient was treated in that way? And that's what I would wake up to tomorrow.
Now, let's talk about the past, but doing so with a lens of reflection. Let's say I was to bring you back to the moment where you were thinking about starting a company. Let's say you're back in Indiana University and you're able to stop that younger self, you know, maybe coming out of one of the classes, and you're able to give that younger Bradley one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Yeah, I would say the number one piece of advice would be to ensure that the business was constructed with a recurring revenue engine. That is just, and that's clearly become the norm now. But back then, you know, people were still selling licensed software, and I was in the consulting business. So my dad would say, do something where you make money while you sleep. And I didn't really understand what he meant. Frankly, it took me a little while. And now I realize he was basically saying, do something that has this recurring revenue that builds the mountain, because then you have all these ways to innovate with that, with those additional resources. So I'd say that would be the number one advice I would give my younger self, is always do things that have recurring revenue.
I love it. Bradley, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Please find me on LinkedIn. I am Bradley Bostic, B-R-A-D-L-E-Y Bostic on LinkedIn. And my link tree is also there on my LinkedIn profile. So you can see all the other ways that you can connect with me and follow me, and would love to have you check out my Boom Bostic Healthcare podcast, where we have bold innovators on that are talking about the cool things they're doing in healthcare that we can all learn from. And then there's also a newsletter that goes along with that. So those would be the best ways to find me after this.
Amazing. Well, Bradley, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show. It has been an honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Alejandro. It's been really fun. I appreciate it.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.